Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
We're going to begin this hour with a discussion about what happens when Massachusetts passes a law to supposedly protect consumers, but then doesn't enforce it.
Let me guess. Outrage, public hearings, and a new commitment to fix the law to protect consumers.
You would think, but that's not what's happening. The current law is supposed to protect consumers against ticket scalpers. You know, those guys you see standing right next to the cops in Kenmore Square selling Fenway seats for way more than face value, but it's not.
So Beacon Hill lawmakers are considering scrapping the state's current law, which was designed to regulate the resale of tickets, and replace it with a measure that would place few restrictions on the practice. In other words, ticket resellers will be able to charge pretty much whatever they want.
So listeners, what do you think about this? Have you shopped for Red Sox or Celtics or Bruins tickets recently? Or theater tickets or concert tickets? Have you used companies like StubHub or Ace Tickets? And if so, do you think the aftermarket prices are fair? Do you mind paying hundreds of dollars or more for a bleacher seat at Fenway Park? And what about those ticket scalpers on the streets? Should they be reined in? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And to help us through this hour, we're happy to welcome State Representative Michael Moran. He's a Democrat from Brighton who's sponsoring a bill that would eliminate any cap on the price of resold tickets. It would also offer consumers some protections. And Michael Moran, good to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, reporter Bruce Mole, who's been covering this issue for Commonwealth Magazine. And good to have you, Bruce. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be here.
And Bruce, let me start with you just with a little bit of background. What does the current law in Massachusetts say about reselling tickets? What's it supposed to do?
It says that you're not supposed to be able to resell a ticket for more than $2 above face value plus some allowable expenses that are, it was written quite a long time ago. So those expenses now are a little bit unrelated to the current practices today. But it is vaguely worded about what those expenses were. But the bottom line is there's supposed to be a cap on how much you can resell the ticket for.
Basically, these allowable expenses, pretty ambiguous language that I guess you can sort of drive a truck through pretty much. And whatever the language is supposed to do, it's not really enforced, is it?
No, it's rarely enforced. The whole market for resale of tickets has just exploded in recent years. eBay bought StubHub because it was a thriving business, and eBay was also participating as well. And so it's as if the market has passed the law by and left it in the rearview mirror.
So Michael Moran, representative from Brighton, tell us what your proposed law would do. My understanding is that it would pretty much lift any restrictions on the resale of tickets, but offer protections to consumers in some way.
Essentially, what we're trying to accomplish is to, we know in the past around this issue that sort of because of some outside other issues around, the issue was never really addressed again because of that. And right now, there is certainly some enough evidence out there to prove that we need to take a second look at how and we do this. With these closed markets, that the paperless tickets that are out there and people not having access to these tickets, whether they be for market or even below market. I know that I've seen a study where 50% of the tickets that are out there and that are sold on the internet are sold below market. So it's not entirely about Red Sox tickets and paying a lot of money and that CD scalper on the corner, because I know that's the issue that everybody wants to conjure up. But the Red Sox, the Bruins, the Celtics, and the Patriots are only a small portion of the number of tickets that are out there on the market. And quite frankly, most of them that are being sold online are actually be sold for less than face value.
You're saying most of the tickets now online would be sold for less than face value or are now being sold? But can we focus on the tickets that I think a lot of folks are going to be calling in and talking to us about? I mean, for example, if you look at StubHub today, for example, and you look at a field box for the Red Sox, face value $130, it can go as high as, well, here's a random game, Saturday, July 19th, Boston Red Sox against Baltimore Orioles, it can go as high as $999. Would there be any effort in your bill to put a cap on what these tickets could be resold?
Well, again, what we're trying to do is we're trying to force debate around this issue.
Sure.
Do we put a cap on it? I think it's something we should look at. But let's be honest. These Red Sox tickets are expensive from the get-go,
sure.
whether you get them for face value or not. I know that in my family, my nieces and nephews, they're all going to Brockton Rocks games and Lowell Spinners games because, quite frankly,
they're affordable.
Well, taking the family to a Red Sox game just is quite for most of us is just not there anymore.
Yeah.
Never mind the parking and the hot dog and the hats and the fingers, the foam fingers and all the rest of it. It's just not affordable anymore. So using some people throw that out there as a red herring. Oh, this is going to drive up the ticket prices. Well, note to everybody: the ticket prices have already been driven up.
Right. But aren't they up? I mean, wouldn't your law wouldn't essentially put a cap on? I mean, let me just ask the question this way. Why not? What's wrong with a cap that just sort of says, you know, you can't do this because it just drives the prices up too high?
Well, it's one of the things I think we should consider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a law. It's a
proposal,
bill.
Yeah.
And it's going through the appropriate channels. It's going to be in front of a committee for a hearing right now. I talked to Chairman Spiliotis, and he hasn't scheduled a hearing yet, but he is planning on scheduling on sometime in the fall. And, you know, if there is people speaking up at that at the hearing and saying this is something we should consider, then I would certainly be open to it.
And what about protections for consumers? What's your view on the best way to protect consumers?
Well, you know, there is some merit in an open and free market, and having people have the ability to sell. You know, you buy a Ford Explorer, they don't tell you where, when you can drive it and how much gas you can put it and how many miles you can put on it. So there is a, you know, when you do buy a ticket, there is some ownership that should be involved. The other thing is this whole notion of this whole paperless ticket thing. That's really what kind of piqued my interest on this issue. I know that there, you know, I have a lot of friends that have young daughters who and young sons who happen to like this Miley Cyrus person. I don't even know who she is, but you know, her entire concert tour was a paperless ticket.
Mm.
So you
and
know,
what's the problem with that?
Well, I mean, if somebody wants to go along and buy a ticket for their grandchildren or something like that, they put it on their credit card. Mm. They have to show it up at the venue to get them into the concert. Conversely, if you have a say you buy a set of tickets for the Red Sox, you do go out and you buy maybe 6 or 8 games or your season ticket holder. You know, you should be able to give those tickets to somebody to go to the game.
Mm.
And you know, this notion MLB is considering this moving towards this paperless ticket, and that concerns me.
Mm. What do you think about this, Bruce Mould? Chime in here. We don't have a sort of full-throated consumer advocate here, but I mean, in terms of making this more approachable as an issue for the average consumer, what do you think has to happen?
Well, I think it all comes down to who owns that ticket once you purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people believe the team, unlike the Ford Explorer, which you drive off the showroom and then you drive it around, you park it in your garage, this ticket just entitles you to go to a venue and sit in a seat. So who controls that? And I think the motivation behind this legislation is to say the consumer owns it and can do it with it, whatever they want. The venues would like to sort of control that. And the idea of this paperless ticketing is that the person who buys it has to actually show up and purchase it.
Yeah.
I think for regular people, they sort of understand that the law of supply and demand applies, especially in Boston with our sports teams doing so well, so that the price of a resold ticket is going to be a lot higher than the regular price. They don't like it, though. They don't like that at all. And I don't think it helps to say that sometimes the price goes lower, because this always comes into play on events that everybody wants to go to. That's when it sort of hits you hard.
Mm.
And so, you know, if you want to go see a Red Sox game and you aren't one of the lucky ones to get an original ticket, or if you have season tickets, you can make money off of the
resale.
Right,
yeah.
And if you don't, you're not going to be able to go unless you can afford that resale price.
Yeah, Michael Moran, let me just ask you this, and I'll just speak personally here. You know, I'll go to a ball game once or twice a season. I'd like to go a lot more, but frankly, I just can't afford it. And it seems crazy to me that I have to pay $300, $400 to take my family to the ball game, because basically the tickets have been bought up by these resellers and the prices, you know, go up and up and up and up. That just seems like, why shouldn't there just be a law that says you can't do that? You've got to just keep these prices more or less the way they are, or else enforce the existing law that, you know, only a reasonable expense can be added to it.
Well, let me just you can't $300-$400 is opposed to $200-$300. I mean, these tickets are expensive to begin with.
Yeah.
And you know, it's tough to use the Red Sox as an example because they're expensive to start with.
Sure.
You know, I would love to make the Red Sox, you know, charge us all $20 a ticket. But the reality is, you know, you're not going to be able to have the caliber of team they have if you do that. So you know, the in that sense, the market is dictating what the product is. So, you know, if you have a team like them with the second highest or third highest payroll in Major League Baseball and a fan base that it has and it delivers championships after championships, there is going to be a cost to that.
Well, that's true, but with respect, aren't we also dealing with the ability for people to just, I mean, I was just covering the big line at the TD Center when the Bruins made it into the Stanley Cup, and, you know, there were people buying up groups of tickets there and walking across the street and reselling them. I mean, there were people complaining about that. I mean, this is a problem, and it seems like it's not enforced. I mean, that there's nothing to prevent people from doing that, even though, as we speak here today, there are laws against that.
Mm. It seems to me, though, that that's,
yeah, Bruce Small.
You're pointing out the exact problem here. It's very hard to enforce.
Okay.
So are you going to have cops all over the place so when they watch that person go across the street or post it online or talk to their neighbor or how do you enforce it? Mm. It's almost a nightmare to think about it. So there have been a lot. The Patriots have tried to stop this, and they even sued StubHub because they alleged that the StubHub was encouraging fans to do this. But it got costly for them to fight it in court, and it ended up getting settled, and it went away. Yeah. It's just incredibly difficult to enforce.
Let's go to a couple of calls because we've already got a lot of people calling in. Listeners, we're talking about the secondary ticket resale market and efforts to change that, and we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Arlo, who's calling from Watertown. Hi, Arlo.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to do it. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so I'm a 24-year-old. I live in Watertown, and I've been going to Red Sox games and Celtics games almost my entire life. On this issue, I got to side with ticket brokerages, firms like Ace Tickets, StubHub, and ticket resellers. In that, in a town like Boston, where almost every sports team is an every sports ticket is an extremely kind of high valued item. Once you own a ticket, it should be similar to a stock. You could sell it for whatever rate it's the current rate's going for. Everyone is trying to get to these games, so if you own a ticket, that ticket's yours.
But Arlo, do you think, I mean, for instance, should you have the right, say, to go ahead of time to a very popular sports venue, buy up, say, 30, 40, 50 tickets because you've got that cash and that ability and that time, and then sort of tie up those tickets and resell them later for as much as you want? You think that's okay?
Well, me personally, I do think it's okay, because if I didn't have the money and I really wanted to go to a game, I would show up at the venue early and just buy myself one ticket.
Mm-hmm.
If you really wanted to go to a game, you make it your priority to get there and buy yourself a ticket. Early in the season, you got to prepare yourself for it. But in terms of Boston sports, it's such a extremely high-valued subject in this city that you kind of got to get on it a little early if you really want to save your money and not, you know, spend out of your pockets.
That's truer words are never spoken. Thanks, Arlo. I appreciate your call. Let's go to Lauren, who's calling from Wayland. Hi, Lauren.
Hi. I'm frankly shocked and think this is all pretty shameful, considering that these ticket agents are the ones who are driving up the prices in the first place by buying up huge blocks of tickets or giving people the incentive to buy tickets that they never intend to use, don't want to use, to resell them for huge amounts of money, which is crazy. It means that people can't go to concerts. A lot of people who would otherwise see performers can't see them. Performers are not receiving a fair share of the resale price. So and to throw your hands up and say, oh, gee, well, the tickets are expensive. Yeah, because your feeding the monster.
Sure, okay,
not
Lauren.
Fixing the problem.
Lauren, you put the point well on the table. Let me just get Representative Michael Moran to respond. What do you say to Lauren's concern there?
Well, I guess I have a fundamental disagreement with her. I don't believe it's the ticket brokers that are driving up the prices. I think the product is. I can guarantee you that if you put a product out there where, like the Bruins have had in the past and like the Celtics used to have, you will see less people in the seats. So I'm not going to cede the point that it's the brokers that are driving up the prices. I would say it's has more to do with the quality of the product that's on the field or on the ice or in the stadium. You can just look at the Bruins and this year alone. I went on StubHub for game 6 and it was $800 for a seat in the last row of the balcony, and to get up on the glass, it was $4,000 a seat. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't think those, first of all, those seats wouldn't be for sale if the product wasn't there, and I know for sure that those weren't the prices in the regular season. So,
let me bring Glenn Lerman into the conversation. He's head of communications for StubHub, and that's a ticket reselling company. Obviously has a big presence here in Boston. It's based in San Francisco, and he's joining us from KQED in San Francisco. And Mr. Lerman, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So you would be in favor, I gather, of a law that's being proposed now that would essentially allow you guys to resell tickets for whatever the market would bear. Is that fair?
Yes, that's fair to say. Absolutely. What we've found is that whenever there is an open and transparent secondary ticket marketplace with entrenched consumer protections, I think that's an important point, it ultimately benefits consumers.
And how does it do that? Because, of course, you know, what we've been hearing from folks, you know, the average consumer is going to hear that and say, really? Isn't that just going to allow you guys to drive the price of tickets up and up and up and up?
Actually, I think it's going to have the adverse effect. Whenever you have more competition in the marketplace, that leads to better consumer protections. It leads to better consumer availability. You know, what we've seen in the last 3 years, to give you a good example, as adoption has taken place on StubHub, over the last 3 years, we've seen about a 350% increase in volume to our site.
Wait, go back. You used a term that I'm not familiar with. You said as adoption has increased on StubHub?
Right. As people have started to use the secondary marketplace.
I see. Sorry.
As become a popular place for people to use, we've seen increasing the amount of people using the site, but at the same time, that's leading to prices decreasing. So over the same period of time, you've seen prices decrease 20%. So what that tells you is that as people use the site, the more people who come, the lower the prices are. I think, you know, in your conversation earlier, there were a few misnomers. I think one of the first things is that there are brokers and people buying up all the tickets, and that's what's being sold. Couldn't be further from the truth, actually.
All right, wait. Glenn Lerman, I want to come back to that point, and I'm not shutting you down intentionally, but
sure.
You put something on the table, and I just want to get Bruce Moll to come back in. This idea, Bruce, that Glenn put on the table, that this will actually drive prices down, do you think that argument has merit? Well, how do you respond to that?
I've seen their statistics showing that prices do go down, but I don't think... I agree with the representative. It all depends on the product. If it's the Red Sox or any sports team in Boston now, I think their research would show that prices stay pretty high. Hmm. If you've got a team that can't fill the stadium, yeah, then the prices may go down because there's not much of a resale market for those tickets. But that's what drives it. It isn't that there's a resale market and there's competition and that's driving the price down. It's the product itself that people want to see. It's supply and demand.
And Bruce, while I have you on this, how do the sports teams feel about this legislation? I want to note that the Red Sox, for example, have a lucrative secondary ticketing deal with Ace Ticket. How does that work, and where do they stand on this?
Well, my understanding is that their relationship with Ace is more of a sponsorship role. Mm-hmm. So Ace pays them money so that they can say they're the official ticket something or other for the Red Sox.
I see.
The Major League Baseball has a deal with StubHub, whereby if you are a season ticket holder or a Red Sox fan with a ticket, you can go to the team's website, go directly to StubHub, and sell your ticket there. And I think, I could be corrected if I'm wrong, but the deal is that the team will actually wipe out the ticket you're selling and issue the buyer a new ticket so that there's no confusion, no changing of hands. It's all done very nice and neat. That is a That is a total embrace of this secondary market, in my opinion, by the Red Sox. They waited 2 years before joining the rest of Major League Baseball, but then they did. The rest of the teams, the Bruins, the Celtics, I think they've sort of accommodated the new reality. The Patriots are the one team that has resisted. As I said, they sued StubHub a couple years ago. They think the ticket and the license to a seat belongs to them. They want to control what happens to that. And they've found that when people show up with tickets, and sometimes they're not real tickets, they're counterfeit tickets, it causes major problems at the gate. That's what the suit sort of erupted from, because people were showing up and not being allowed in, and it, you know, they may have been tailgating or whatever, and it got abusive, I guess.
Let's get another caller into this conversation. Michelle is calling from Whitman. Hi, Michelle, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
I have a couple things that I was like, this is like a really huge pet peeve of mine. I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and I remember when waiting for like an Aerosmith concert, that when I went to Ticketmaster, it was a cap off of like 6 tickets per person.
Right.
And then I remember when the Eagles Freezes Over tour came, it seemed like all of a sudden all these other companies popped up that had bought the tickets. So I don't know, like, what happened with that. It seemed to be, like, a good kind of an idea, because then, like, the average person could get a ticket, and then the ticket prices weren't driven up. And then another thing is, like, baseball is supposed to be a family pastime, and it appalls me that the Red Sox Corporation charges such exorbitant prices for something that's supposed to be America's pastime, when they have so many sponsorships and advertising. Went to a game a while ago. The tickets were gifted to me. And I was figuring they probably take $1 million in a night, and I think it's a shame.
Well, it's true. They get a lot for their tickets, and that might be a subject for another show. But, Michelle, your first point is a good one, and let me go back to Glenn Lehrman out in San Francisco with StubHub. Glenn Lehrman, you were talking about that you favor lifting limits on this with consumer protections. What kind of consumer protections might be included in any legislation that would do this?
I think what you need to do is you need to guarantee the authenticity of your tickets. You know, when people in the past have bought off the street, you pay in cash, you have no recourse if those tickets aren't valid. There's nothing you can do about it. There's no one you can complain to, because technically it wasn't even legal to purchase in the first place. What the secondary market online has you know, been able to do is tell people, hey, listen, if you buy this ticket, we're going to guarantee that you're going to get into the building with it. And if you don't, we're going to give you a ticket of equal or greater value, or we're going to give you your money back. So you have security purchasing that ticket, because, you know, as you've mentioned, sometimes that ticket can be really expensive. Tickets to the Stanley Cup, as Representative Moran said earlier, you know, could be $3,000 or $4,000, and you don't want to purchase something that expensive and worry about whether it's going to work when you try to get into the building.
Representative Moran, let me come back to you. Our time is sort of winding down here, but what's the next step? Where are we? You've put a bill in there, a proposal for a law that would lift these limits, offer some consumer protection. What's the next step? What's the timing on this up at Beacon Hill?
Well, let me just say the impetus for me to do this is stems from a couple of things. Some people in my the Miley Cyrus concert, that, believe it or not, I got a lot of people who had talked about that, and I was kind of interested in it, to be honest with you. And the second thing is that I think most people will agree is that the laws right now around reselling tickets in Massachusetts need to be looked at, and we need to figure out what are the appropriate steps to take to make sure there are consumer protections in there, and that people can purchase a ticket and have comfort in knowing that that is the ticket, and that when they get to the venue, they are going to get into that show. What this will do is it starts the dialogue. We'll have a hearing sometime, hopefully in the fall, and we'll work with the committee chairs in the House and Senate to make sure that they look at this issue and they take a serious look at it and try and come up with a piece of legislation out of the committee that will address a lot of the concerns that you heard today on this show.
All right, and we'll check back in with you all in the fall. And thank you very much for coming in today. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That's Massachusetts State Representative from Brighton, a Democrat, Michael Moran. He's sponsoring the new bill on ticket resales. Also joining us, Bruce Moll, editor of Commonwealth Magazine. He's been writing about this story. Bruce Moll, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And Glenn Lerman, out in San Francisco, head of communications for StubHub. We appreciate you coming in today as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's more ahead on the show. We're going to return to the Whitey Bulger story. How did Whitey Bulger manage to look so different than the image on the FBI's Most Wanted poster? That's still... Well, it's Wednesday, and that means we check in with Only a Game's Bill Littlefield to talk about the week in sports. Hi, Bill.
Hello, Anthony.
Good to see you.
Good to be here.
So we just heard a discussion about the high cost of tickets, scalping, and what to do about it. What's your take on all this?
My take is to stay away from the aftermarket. Stay away from the secondary sellers of tickets, whether they're on the street or in offices pretending to be reliable and responsible.
It really does require, it seems like, a pound of flesh to get these
tickets. No, the prices are absolutely out of the question, especially, obviously, for premier events.
Now, I'm struck by this fact, and have been for years, that ticket scalpers, I mean, we talk about this year in, year out, and yet ticket scalpers of major sports venues like Fenway Park seem to operate with impunity. Everyone knows they're there. Why isn't something done about this?
Well, I would imagine and I would hope that it's because the police are out catching actual criminals. I mean, if there ever was a victimless crime, I suppose this is it, because only people who wish to spend this kind of money on tickets do it. But seriously, I guess it's just part of the price of doing business in the very big business that pro sports has become.
Well, speaking of pro sports, let's talk a little baseball. The Red Sox succumbed last night to Cliff Lee of the Philadelphia Phillies.
And Cliff Lee has shut out the Red Sox in game one, 5-0. And the left-hander from Benton, Arkansas, has now tossed three consecutive shutouts. He was surgical tonight.
He shut them out 5-0. He no-hit them through six or seven innings, and that was his third shutout in a row. I mean, how impressive is Cliff Lee?
Well, he's extremely impressive, and there is no shame in losing to Cliff Lee, whether you're in first place or not. He's been extraordinary this year, and the Phillies' pitching in general has been quite good this year, and that's one of the reasons they're on the top of their division.
Yeah, interesting, too, that the Red Sox usually tear up National League teams, but they've lost 5 out of 6 against Pittsburgh, San Diego, now Philadelphia. And speaking of Philadelphia, some folks speculate that the Red Sox-Phillies could well be meeting each other in the fall in the World Series.
Yeah, a lot of things could happen between now and October, so I wouldn't worry too much about who wins games in June, even between two contending clubs.
Little interesting subplot in the coming days. Adrian Gonzalez, the Red Sox slugging first baseman, going to be moved out to right field so that David Ortiz, the designated hitter, they can get his bat into the lineup. He'll be playing first base.
Yeah, and forget the designated hitter. I mean, David Ortiz, base runner extraordinaire. The guy's stealing bases at an unprecedented rate. Not since the days of Louis Tiant batting and running the bases have we seen such extraordinary base runner.
You know, he is just always fun to watch. It's so good to see him hitting the ball hard and playing such a major role in the Red Sox again.
Absolutely.
Just such joy.
They've been talking for years about how good this guy would be if they ever got him in a Red Sox uniform, and they finally did, and what a surprise. He's really good.
Really. So let's do a quick post-NHL season check-in. Bruins captain Zdeno Chara will be meeting with police in Montreal sometime in the coming weeks. This goes back to a case last March when Chara hit violently the Canadiens' Max Pacioretty, who suffered a concussion and a cracked vertebrae.
Zone. Oh, Pacioretty is down face first as Chara angled him, and Pacioretty was lined up against the center glass between the two benches. This is a very hazardous part of the ice.
Could Chara really be facing criminal charges over this?
Max Pacioretty hopes not. He has said everybody should just move on. I'm moving on. I'm okay physically. So, you know, that's his take. What the authorities in Montreal will make of this, I really don't know, although it would be quite unusual for criminal charges to be brought.
Well, interesting that all these weeks and months later, actually, that this is still the focus of investigators in Montreal.
The whole idea of violence, and especially the idea of head injuries in contact sports, is very much in the front of the consciousness, not only of the players, but of the fans as well. And it probably should be. I mean, anything that leads people to pay more attention to potentially life-changing head injuries is a good thing.
Mm. Well, let's move on to women's tennis. At Wimbledon, the Williams sisters, Serena and Venus, knocked out in the fourth round. And now it looks like Maria Sharapova is really poised to reclaim a title she hasn't won for the past 7 years.
It's been a very strange landscape at this tournament. Both Williams sisters out, number one seeds falling, top seeds falling all over the draw. And a very nice road for Maria Sharapova, as you point out, from here on in, if she can continue to play as well as she's been playing.
Well, that'll be a fun weekend. I always enjoy that on the weekend, breakfast at Wimbledon. So that'll be fun to watch. Thanks, Bill. We appreciate you coming in today.
My pleasure.
That's Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game, which you can hear right here on WBUR Saturday at 7 in the morning and again at 7 in the evening. And right now, online, you can read Bill's treatment inverse, of course, of the bankruptcy of the LA Dodgers. You can find a link to that at RadioBoston.org.